the guys that are telling people to eat less carbohydrates, they're saying something that's unpopular. Anyone who tells you to eat less carbohydrates is probably somebody you should follow, because that person is, number one, correct. Number two, saying something that is massively unpopular.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to lose followers by saying people can't have, or they shouldn't be having, or they should have the least amount possible of candy and cookies and yeah. cake. You know, why would you say that? There's only one reason. Because it's true.
It's uncomfortably accurate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I'm going to use that. Uncomfortably accurate.
Welcome back to the show. I'm Travis Chappell, and I believe that if you can connect with the best, you can become the best. So after creating 800 podcast episodes about building your network, I've come to realize that networking is really just making friends. You're doing it the right way anyway. Join me as I make friends with world-class athletes like Shaquille O'Neal, entertainers like Rob Dyrdek, authors like Dr. Nicole LaPera, former presidents like Vicente Fox, or even the occasional FBI hostage negotiator, billionaire real estate mogul, or polarizing political figure. So if you want to make more friends that help you become a better version of yourself, then subscribe to the show and keep on listening, because this is Travis Makes Friends.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Travis Makes Friends podcast. Today, I'm making friends with Dr. John Jaquish. How's it going, man? Welcome to the show.
It's fantastic. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir. I'm glad to get you in the air-conditioned room after you've been braving the heat of the Las Vegas summer.
The air conditioning's nice.
Yeah, just a little bit. But you're talking about going to Arizona after this, which is even hotter than here.
Yep, they have melted trash cans there. You ever seen the standard green trash cans like start to slightly bend and kind of crumple?
Yeah,
and like you got to get over 120, and they've had a couple of days like that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I was going to say, Vegas gets like 115, 116, which is already too damn hot, to be clear.
Too damn hot, yeah.
But I was in Bullhead City, Arizona, which is where Lake Mojave is, by border of Laughlin, you know?
Yeah.
We were there for a houseboat trip with my family for a few years back.
Yeah.
It was 126, and I was like, this shouldn't be allowed on the planet.
No.
This is too hot. Like, we should not exist here right now. This is ridiculous.
Heat kills a lot more people than cold.
Does it?
Yeah. And really? That surprises everyone when you think about it. Yeah. We can survive cold very well.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean it's comfortable.
I was going to say, is that the reason for all the cold plunge stuff that's happening right now?
No. The cold plunge stuff is really all about hype.
Really?
Yeah. There have been
I'd love to
two
hear more about
great
that. Yeah.
studies that have come out recently that really... It shows that it doesn't enhance your recovery ability at all.
Hmm.
It does take away inflammation markers that cause growth.
So that's not a good thing.
That's not a good thing. So, yeah, a lot of people, and of course, there is a tiny effect on brown fat.
Okay.
So, like, you drop temperature low enough. The idea is that if you can form an ice crystal in fat, the ice crystals are shaped in a way where they puncture the cell membrane of some of the fat cells and force them to metabolize. Because once they don't have a cell membrane anymore, you know, they're just sort of free-flowing in the circulatory system. That claim is marginally true, but brutally exaggerated by the people who sell
cold plunge
cold therapy stuff. I like cold therapy. I would do cold therapy if I had a cold plunge. I would have to get my wife's buy-in.
Yeah, good luck.
So, right. You know what I mean? Like, I will spend those chips where I have to. I'm not going to spend it on a cold plunge.
On a cold plunge, yeah.
No, I mean, if we build a nice big
like
house.
Like, there is improvement, but, like, not a $15,000 cold plunge in your basement improvement.
Here's right. Exactly. Like, to me, it's worth it if the money it's going to cost is nothing to you, and if you want to basically replace your morning coffee with a cold plunge.
Mm.
Because to start the day, to get circulation going, it's awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely better blood flow, better than the vasoconstriction provided by caffeine, which also has a couple of downsides. So, like I'm 50-50. I especially am very aware of some of the downsides of caffeine because I had an H. pylori infection for 7 years. You probably don't know what that is.
Yeah, please explain.
No one in America knows. American doctors don't even know what
I was going to say, my naturopathic doctor talks about it fairly frequently. But
Okay. Well,
I'd love an explanation.
So it's a bacteria, lives in your stomach. It consumes the mucous membrane of the human stomach, also animal stomachs. But basically, it just makes you like bloated like you wouldn't believe. And I mean, I was to the point where I had trouble breathing.
So it like damage your gut microbiome?
It's not a microbiome thing. That's before we get to the microbiome. It's the stomach.
Got it.
It doesn't seem to have much of a knock-on effect into the rest of the digestive system. But having ulcers all over the lining of your stomach really sucks and it is very limiting and it takes years to heal from it.
And there's a correlation for you between that and caffeine.
So caffeine really brutalizes these ulcers. So you've got to like either like massively limit and dilute or eliminate. So like, you know, I have a pre-workout called Imperium. I make that shit so diluted that it's like I'll drink a liter of water for like a quarter of a scoop. And like that's the only way I'll like get, you know, some. So I've like, I become a low caffeine guy, not by choice.
Okay.
Just, you know, kind of like forced.
Do you do anything else for like energy boosts or?
Most of the stuff out there is just bullshit.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and yeah, it is. A lot of like energy drinks.
It's like you want to believe it so much.
Of course. So, well, I mean, hey, that's why people buy most stuff because they want to believe it. And
they're looking for the reasons to justify their decision they've already made.
Every listener like who's doing something entrepreneurial needs to consider the fact that no matter what their claim is, people are initially going to say bullshit because most of the stuff out there is kind of wishful thinking or what people want to hear. The majority of nutrition programs, like, you know, a lot of different influencers that have like, you know, sign up for my 12-week program. I'm going to totally change your nutrition. You're going to live a better lifestyle. And don't worry, you get to eat pizza and donuts. And it's like, right, it's just telling people what they want to hear. And then, of course, they get into the material and then they're like, oh, I can have like a piece of pizza once a month.
Yeah.
And that's not this, what they wanted to hear.
Or so I have this gross keto cookie that doesn't taste like a cookie.
Right. It tastes more like algae or something, which is probably made of algae. You know,
it's not made of cookie.
It's not a cookie. It's whatever. But
I think I'd rather just have a cookie.
And it's so like much of a struggle. Look how much people love the stuff that they want to hear.
Yeah.
We are at a place in society where people would pick a news channel. And I'll just say what I'm thinking. You know, they watch CNN. Almost everything on CNN is an absolute lie. Almost everything. Yet people still choose to only immerse themselves in CNN because it's like, it's the news they want. You know, they want to believe Orange Man bad. They want to believe, you know, I don't really, I don't have a side in this argument. Like when it comes to science,
I don't give a shit
who wins president. But
yeah, well, to me, it's always like the polar opposite sides tend to be that way almost exclusively because they're only getting their information from this one thing, this one source, and they only talk to other people who agree with that
total
source
echo chamber behavior.
Yeah, they create this world that exists only for them.
And it's not true anyway. And actually both sides do that same thing.
Yeah.
But like, you know, CNN is just like an example of like where like you can demonstrate how almost everything they say is false, yet they run with that ball all day, every day. And it's like, who's watching this crap? Like, apparently, well, like, decent amount of people.
I was going to say, a decreasing number, though, because their ratings keep going down all the time.
Well, you know, it probably sucks for the people that really want to believe in, you know, like, what the current president has said, but then the economy keeps getting worse and worse and worse despite everything the guy's saying. So it's like, okay, you're wrong. You know, it's like... But, you know, they're not going to wave the flag and say, excuse me, I was wrong about everything. Like,
right,
no,
exactly.
They're not going to do that.
Well, that doesn't feel good. You know what I mean?
Right. and when it comes to a lot of science and nutrition stuff, like...
It's the same thing,
Like the guys that are telling people to eat less carbohydrates, they're saying something that's unpopular. Like anyone who tells you to eat less carbohydrates is probably somebody you should follow. Because that person is, number one, correct. Number two, saying something that is... massively unpopular.
Yeah.
Like you're going to lose followers by saying people can't have or they shouldn't be having or they should have the least amount possible of candy and cookies and cake. You know, like why would you say that? There's only one reason. Because it's true.
It's uncomfortably accurate.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like that. I'm gonna use that. Uncomfortably accurate.
Yeah, because that's the thing, man. I have down a good amount of weight this year myself. And every year, it feels like I kind of started from the same spot. And what would happen was I get really disciplined for like really short stints of time. And then you start, you know, buying all the bullshit of like 90 days this and 12 weeks this and 75 this and 60 that and 30 this. And it's like, cool, I'll do that. But the problem is like that is also, even if you do the hard work and the discipline of maintaining that plan during that period of time, the bottom line, for me anyway, I didn't get to the point where I am now, where I'm about 11% body fat right now. Probably started the year around like 26, 27.
Oh, wow. You must feel so much better.
Oh, completely. Yeah, totally different.
Congratulations.
But like, I got to that point because I finally decided to do the hard work. Is like my point is like, yeah. I was telling myself it was hard because it's not easy to do something like 75 hard or whatever. And I'm not trying to bash any of those programs in particular. I'm just saying that like conceptually they make sense because they force you to discipline yourself for a period of time. But the bottom line is for me, and I think for most people, is you have to figure out what's going to work for you. And the only way to do that is to work hard on figuring out what works for you in your body and yourself and your lifestyle. Like, there's so many other questions to ask. So how often do you travel? How often do you eat out? Mm. What do you eat when you eat out? Where do you like, what are you putting in your body when you're at home? Do you have a routine that you're in? How much water you're drinking? Do you drink alcohol? Are you going to parties where alcohol is served? Like, there's so many other questions you have to answer. But for me, it just came down to like, well, I'm doing 45 days this, but then 45 days is up and I still don't have any other information about how my body actually processes any of the stuff I'm putting
in those into it. In those, like, the programs that have a day limit, they're almost designed for you to fail because it's not a lifestyle.
Right.
It's just, it's a challenge. That's
bottom line.
Yeah. Well, no one ever got healthy from a challenge. Like, look at anybody who wins a medal at the Olympics. It's like, oh, did you do a 45 day challenge to get here? No, they've been training their whole life.
It was a 17-year challenge.
Yeah, right. And it's a lifestyle. It's like, you know, I'm going to eat the absolute optimum nutrition.
Right.
I'm, you know, going to take the supplements I need to take, if any.
Yeah.
I'm going to train as absolutely hard as I can for the specific amount of time. One thing I love about pro athletes is they know what overtraining is and they don't do it. So, like, whereas when you come to the, just sort of the regular population, you know, first of all, they bear the mark of the last truck that hit them.
Yeah.
Meaning the last article they read, it's like, oh, I'm doing that.
I'm keto,
and
baby.
I'm gonna combine it. Yeah, I met somebody, it was a couple years ago. It was one of the stupidest conversations I've ever had. Saw somebody in the airport and he says, I'm following your advice, but I'm combining it with like the South Beach diet. And I'm thinking that's the most contradictory.
But so that means you're
the
not
South
following
Beach diet is just basically how to be a lard ass. it's basically like bread and salad and nothing else.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
And lots of cardio probably.
No, they didn't really say much about that. But I mean, ultimately, you can eat crap food and just eat a tiny amount of it. And are you going to lose body fat? Yeah, you'll also lose a ton of muscle.
Sure.
But they don't say that part. So,
and not to mention, you'll lose feeling good.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like,
but so many people don't realize what feeling good is.
That's very true.
They don't know.
Yeah.
It's like once you're carnivore, if you go off carnivore for like a weekend, you're like, God, I feel awful. And then you realize this awful that I feel, this is every day for everyone. Except normally me.
Exactly. Yeah.
And then when you go back, you're like really appreciate. You're like, oh my God.
You start realizing that a ton of like the conditions you thought you had were really just a matter of
inflammation, chronic inflammation,
or like you just didn't give your body enough nutrition, or you're eating too much of that thing and your body is negatively reacting to that. And it's like, oh well, that wasn't a condition at all. It was just I was drinking a gallon of milk a day,
I was just
and my body
eating
didn't like that.
Like an unsupervised child. Yeah.
But you go to the doctor and they're like, you have IBS, take this medication. And it's just like, oh, now I'm mixing in all these chemicals and other medication in my body with the stuff that I was already putting in my body that I wasn't supposed to be putting in my body.
Right. It's, you know? It's amazing how
it's like
a
cocktail of poison.
Like chronic diseases really aren't that chronic at all. Like you can make them all go away. Yeah. You just got to stop eating carbohydrates. It's like the same answer to every question.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if your diet is mostly meat, you're mostly going to have zero problems.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you recommend I've heard from multiple people now that like a carnivore diet or like restricting everything, but maybe even red meat in particular is like the best elimination diet that you can do to figure out like what's going on in your body. Do you recommend that to folks?
Yeah, no. So it's like elimination diet to find out what you react poorly to. That's the point of an elimination diet. But the problem is, pretty much everybody reacts poorly to anything other than animal protein.
Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
To a degree.
Okay.
I mean, like for me, I react poorly to dairy because I'm allergic to casein, but other people aren't. So like that side of that elimination exercise could benefit them, but just from a scientific standpoint, pretty much all carbohydrates contain lectins, phthalates, oxalates that are chronic cellular inflammatories. Like you're going to be inflamed. Inflammation is, we have the greatest link between inflammation and cancer. as well as type 2 diabetes and heart disease. So those are the three biggest killers if you take medical error off the list, which almost every news station does, because they don't want you to know about that one. But that's actually the third killer, biggest killer.
You do want to eat carbs, though, right? Like, they're still not at all.
Yeah, I used to say limited.
Okay.
But, like, I was recently at the Hard to Kill Summit with Dr. Sean O'Mara.
Okay.
And, you know, ultimately, there's a great meta-analysis that was, let me say this part first. Great meta-analysis. One of the authors was Professor Menno Henselmans. Really smart guy. I think he's teaching at Cambridge now. I did a sort of a video podcast. Like, I don't really have a podcast. I have this show called Falsehoods of Fitness,
Okay. Which
is probably every like 2 months, somebody says something and it becomes like a trend and it's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard. And then it's like, okay, here's the science that completely defeats that.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, then a couple other people will do like the same kind of video.
It's kind of an as needed show.
Right.
Yeah.
So Professor Henselmans wrote with a bunch of other colleagues a paper about how carbohydrate needs are grossly over exaggerated, because it used to be like, you know, you want to have like around 100, and then you read another paper, you want to have like 60. Another one will say like 200 is best if you're an endurance athlete, or 150 if you're a strength athlete. And these numbers were based on observations with no comparisons.
Gotcha.
Right. So it's like, these athletes did this and it was great. Or they just compared two random numbers. Like, they picked 50 for one group and 150 for another. And they said they did the same, you know? Okay. So it's like, okay, so what do we know from this? Nothing. So they looked at the glucose glycogen usage, and they really found out that the body doesn't use much. So the idea of like carbing up.
Yeah.
For a person who weighs 100 kilos, it's 0.3 per kilo. So I only need 30 grams to carb up, which is
like a half a sandwich.
Nothing. It's like a half a sandwich. Right. And, you know, if your body weight's lower, like for my wife, it's more like 15 grams. And there was actually no differences between genders.
Okay.
In that. And that was a big meta-analysis. I want to say like 50 to 75 papers were analyzed in this.
What about a difference between like type of carbohydrate? Like, if you're eating complex carbs, or if you're eating bread versus eating whatever, asparagus or something like that.
Okay, I'll answer that. And then I want to go back to the Sean O'Mara thing.
Okay, yeah.
So the slower you digest a carbohydrate, the less of it is likely to be stored. Now, of course, there is an energy balance thing. I won't use the word calories because that word is idiotic. It's a unit of heat measurement. I know everybody uses it. It's totally fucking wrong. That's like saying, how many degrees Fahrenheit are you eating today? Like, literally, we could convert calories to degrees Fahrenheit. Like, if I ask that question, you look at me like I had two heads.
Yeah.
So there's an energy balance issue.
Yeah.
But the way we calculate energy, we still count calories from protein. But we shouldn't, because your body has no ability to store protein as body fat. None whatsoever. Which is why when you eat a ton of protein, your body temperature goes up.
Interesting.
Yeah. Like, you notice, like, you have big steak for dinner and then you just start sweating at night. You're like, it's so
hot. Get the meat sweats.
Meat sweats.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the thermogenic effect of overeating, you know, how much protein your body can use.
Interesting.
But it can't be stored, which is why people on the carnivore diet, it's a decent weight loss diet, but it's a really awesome diet for people who don't want to count their calories, but also don't want to put on body fat, because you basically won't.
Interesting.
And there's some arguments of how much fats you need.
Sure.
And that science is not a good equivalent of that carbohydrate meta-analysis that Professor Henselmans did for fat to really figure out. So, like, some people will go for leaner cuts of meats. I always feel better on fattier cuts of meat, so I pretty much only eat ribeyes.
Okay.
But, like, my wife likes chicken.
Sure.
And, you know, chicken nights, I'm like, okay, maybe I'll eat some liverwurst before dinner. I get some fat in my system.
The first time I started hearing about this, I think, was with Michaela Peterson and Jordan Peterson. I think they kind of really widely popularized it. I think there's a lot of people that were probably already doing it. But then when somebody who's well-known all of a sudden gets, you know, crucified for doing it, essentially, it was like, hey, well, let's learn about this a little bit more before we just start.
Sure. And I think, you know, they did it out of necessity, with her rheumatoid arthritis, Professor Peterson with just some of the psychological challenges that come with chronic inflammation. You know, it's heavily linked to depression. So And like he would tell you that any amount of carbohydrates will make you depressed. The more carbohydrates you have, the more depressed you'll be. Removing carbohydrates completely from the diet will keep you from depression. But he says you never cheat. You never have a gram of carbohydrates. Now that's extreme. Also, there are carbohydrates in meat in small amounts. Like there's muscle glycogen in the muscle meat of animals. So, you know, is it really zero or is it close to zero? But the moment I was waiting for, because it's like, okay, do we recommend people have low carbohydrates or no carbohydrates? Like, I'd really like an answer. Now, ultimately, people are going to do what they're going to do. So I think you have to have sort of an option for people who are willing to go a little bit lower, but not cut them out completely because they're just unwilling. So unwilling is unwilling. Like, I'm not going to change their mind. But then there's people who want to have the absolute maximum results and they don't really don't care about taste. Like, I want to be the best. And, you know, when it comes to what they eat, it's just a worthwhile sacrifice for them.
Here's the options.
So Sean Amara, I think he has the smartest approach to looking at general health. The ultimate marker he looks at is visceral fat. So the fat that is between organs in sort of the middle of your body. Because, you know, some people have like a gut, but it's not like a roll of soft fat. It's like hard.
It's a keg.
It's a keg.
It's not six pack. It's
right.
A keg.
It's because on the inside, they have fat pushing all of their organs and their abdomen outward. So visceral fat, it's highly linked to all chronic diseases I mentioned earlier. Sort of the worse your visceral fat is, the worse those things, you know, type 2 diabetes, cancer, and heart disease are all like on that list, like heavily tied. So I wouldn't say there's a causation relationship. There isn't. But there is like the correlation, super heavy. And right, like anybody who's got any of those problems, like I had a fraternity brother who was a really slim guy, and but he would eat trash, just nothing but like it was like pasta. Like he was really the whole like, oh, meat's bad for you, so I'm just gonna have a bowl of pasta every night. And he's like, it's cheaper anyway. So I mean, he's at my fraternity house, and
we gotta listen to the food pyramid, man.
The food pyramid got him because he's diabetic. He was when we were very young, and he's like, but I'm not fat. And I thought back, I'm like, I bet his visceral fat was significant. So Dr. Amara, he's been doing these analyses for years, just looking at visceral fat. And he says, he keeps saying that the only thing that really drives visceral fat down to levels where you're truly healthy is carnivore without any cheating or anything like that. And so I actually got the chance to ask him on stage. We were on a panel, and I'm like, I have a question for Dr. Amara. He was sitting right next to me. And I said, to be absolutely optimal, to have the best visceral fat, how many, on average, grams of carbohydrates per day should people be taking in? And I could see the look on his face because he just did not want to answer that question. I was like,
I don't want to tell anybody what to do.
And he goes, well, he says, I'll tell you. And he pauses because he knows, like, he says, the answer is zero. So, wow. I mean, like, I didn't even really want to hear that. Like, yeah, there's stuff like sometimes I like some sauce on my steak. You know, and sometimes there's a little bit of sugar in that. I used to love eating ribs until I found out what the hell they do to ribs. And then it's just like, I can never eat ribs again. It's just like they just drench it and like basically melted Snickers bars. Like, unfortunately, it was like such a bummer when I figured that out.
So if you're going to cheat on your diet, what's your go-to?
I just don't.
I
mean, I suppose like my wife just had like a kind of a fitness figure kind of competition. We went out to dinner and I had a bite of a couple things that I would never normally eat. So that's it. But still, you know, I mean, I might be like under 50 grams.
So you're mostly just eating protein, lean meat, fatty
like
meat.
Usually my order at a restaurant is like a 40-ounce ribeye. Like a tomahawk or something.
What about having like eggs in the morning, stuff like that? Eggs are good, right?
Eggs are amazing. I typically do one or two meals a day. Just because I travel
busy.
A lot.
That's what I've gotten down to.
I definitely prefer two meals a day. That's much more comfortable. Because, like, you know, sometimes going over 40 ounces, like, I might have, like, a 60-ounce steak. Like, that last 10 ounces, I do not love. I'm just like, And hey, Dr. Sean Baker always says, like, eat steak like it's your job. Mm. Like, you're trying to fuel growth. You're trying to be the absolute best. And that comes from nutrition.
I'm going to get that quote printed out somewhere, put it somewhere.
Yeah, put that on the wall.
Eat steak like it's your job. That's something I can do.
Right. Yeah. Right. And if you think of it that way, it's a lot easier.
Yeah.
Another thing I really enjoy is fasting.
Yeah.
Like, when I want to cut body fat, there's no easier way to do it. There's a lot of great research out there about fasting. It shows you some of the benefits that you get with fasting that you don't get with calorie restriction. But there's some zealots out there who are just like, no, calorie restriction is absolutely superior. Eating makes you hungry.
Mm, that's true.
Which is why when you eat, you should eat until you're full.
Yeah.
This whole like small eating small meals, it's just torture.
Mm.
Like, I hate it. And it doesn't work very well. And any study that comes up with a contradictory answer to that, I really question the methods. Because there are some that say, oh, if people had just as easy of a time sticking with calorie restriction than they did with fasting. And I'm just thinking, no.
Yeah.
Like, they did the study wrong. I don't know what they did wrong. Then, of course, there are also fasting studies that say fasting doesn't work, where the fasting group ate 600 calories a day. How's that fasting?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so they just basically lied in the title of the study.
I saw this advertisement the other day for a fasting bar.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, what are we doing here?
Right.
I know maybe technically it doesn't break the fast or whatever, but it's like, if you're going to fast, just fast.
Here's
a fasting bar for you. It's just an empty raptor.
When you come across, right, it'd be great if there's nothing in it. Or just a rock. throw this rock in the pond. Yeah.
It's amuse yourself with something besides food.
Yeah.
But anyway, fasting. So, yeah. That's been my MO for like the duration of the year for me.
It's so much easier.
It's definitely, that was the big thing for me, Matt, is like I travel a lot and it's so almost impossible for me to follow a specific diet or a specific meal plan while I'm traveling. It's just, everything is more difficult about it. You're going to pack a bunch of meals in like a cooler, but I like to travel light with a carry-on and nothing else. So
yeah, me too.
Like, how does that work?
Yeah,
and then if you're going to go eat out,
exactly,
it's like, what are you going to do?
Nothing.
Can I get a piece of meat, no seasoning, nothing else on the side, just that, you know, it's just, there's so much more work to be done. So when I travel now,
when you're in another country and you ask for that.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you'll get like a plate with like one piece of lunch meat on it. That's like a half an ounce. And they charge you like $25 for it. And you're like, what I asked for?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just easier for you to be like, you know what?
Forget it.
No food till dinner. And then I'll go to dinner and I'll grab something at dinner that I know will be good.
So I tell people when it comes to fasting, don't tell yourself you're eating nothing. You are eating. You're eating the Krispy Kreme donut you had when you were 8 years old. That's been on your fat fucking face your whole life. So let's get rid of that. And you're still eating. So don't act like you're hungry. Don't cry like a bitch. Like, just do it.
Yeah. That's definitely been the thing for me this year has been just like, you know what? I'm just going to fast more often than not. But like
so
kind of
what
you said, I kind of just, it sounds cliche, but I just listen to my body. It's like, if I feel like I'm getting weak or if my workout at the gym wasn't that good or whatever, then like, oh, I'll have two meals instead of one meal or throw in a protein shake or whatever, some jerky or something like that.
Sure.
But like, for the most part, it's been helpful and it's been effective.
Totally.
But I want to go back in time here, John, because we've been talking about some really practical, tactical things, but I want to go back in to kind of build some context around like, okay, for somebody listening who doesn't know who you are, but like, why should I listen to this guy's opinion on nutrition? So let's take a trip back in time here. Let's say a 10-year-old, 11-year-old John, set the scene for us. Where were you? What was life like? You know, parents, what were they doing? Stuff like that. 10.
I don't know if these stories that interesting when I was 10. Boy, I think I broke all the Cub Scout and Boy Scout fitness records.
There you go. So you're always into fitness?
Yeah. Okay. Always like being fast, strong. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. My mom was a great tennis player. My dad. He was a sprinter, and then he always stayed pretty athletic.
What do you do for work?
Jeez, my dad, I could give you an hour lecture on everything my dad's. Probably
he's a hustler.
Most notable thing is he's one of eight people who put the lunar roving vehicle on the moon.
Oh, wow.
So he's a NASA scientist.
Wow.
Yeah.
So he kind of set the bar high in nutrition, fitness.
No, he pretty much ate about 90% meat, and he never really had a reason why.
Even back then?
Yeah.
Because that was when it was like the food pyramid.
No. He was, you know, I had like when I was a little kid, like all other little kids, I hated vegetables. And he's just like, don't eat them. Just forget it. You know, and we need to pay more attention to the instincts of children, because children go to eat vegetables and they taste something that's poisonous. Literally, it's full of oxalates. Like, a deer has 30,000 times the resistance to oxalates than we do. So maybe it's not fucking food for us. Maybe just for the deer. But then we're surrounded by idiots who just lie about these things and say, oh, no, vegetables are really good for you. Like, not really what the clinical literature says. In fact, there was a burden of proof study that came out this year, like, illustrating how meat is bad for you is a theme in so many nutrition, like thousands, tens of thousands of nutrition scientific papers. Yet there is no justification for that comment in those papers. So it's just sort of a bias against it that nobody ever really explained. I can explain it. Meat's expensive. Carbohydrates are cheap. So our government wants to, you know, we got 69% of America right now having their money managed by the U.S. government, whether it's welfare or, I know I don't want to conflate welfare and Social Security. Somebody will have a fucking fit about that. But from the perspective of where is your money coming from and how is it being doled out, they're identical. So the federal government doesn't want to pay for people to eat steak every day. They need to pay everybody $25. They'd rather give them $2 so they can eat Twinkies and then tell them it's healthy. So it's just, it's a matter of it's cheap.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the information that will always be pushed from medical authorities. Otherwise, people are going to demand more expensive food. And if our country can't afford it, no country can afford it.
Yeah, sure, sure.
So, yeah, I mean, it's a shame, but nutrition is more expensive.
This has obviously been something you cared about, Ben, for a really long time, if you said that this mattered to you when you were even in elementary school.
Right.
So did you do a bunch of athletic stuff in high school, college, play sports?
Yeah, wrestling, swimming, and track in high school. And then in undergrad, I played rugby.
Okay. Where'd you go to school?
Sac State. Okay. It's the number one university on Highway 50. You should tell your wife that. Being from Sacramento, she'll love that. Yeah, Sac State. Big school, fun school. I wouldn't call it a party school. It was for me, though.
I was going to say, I've heard a couple people call it a party school.
It's a very fun place to be. And I kind of like majored in fraternity and minored in rugby. I managed to get my coursework done somehow.
Did you major in something like business? Exercise science?
No, it's funny. Like my father, who's a scientist, would not pay for me to have an education in anything science related. No, he says, you need to figure out like the business side. Because he told me I spent most of my life developing amazing technologies and the guy's got like, I don't know, 1,200 patents or something like that. He said, I spent most of my life developing patents that benefited the shareholders of the companies that I worked for. Like, I got paid a great salary, but wow, if I owned some of the intellectual property that I created for Defense Research Laboratories or NASA or whoever else he was working for, like, boy.
Yeah,
like,
you know. A little bit of a different story.
Yeah, I mean, he said you'd be taking like a helicopter wherever you wanted to go.
Right.
And so he's like, you want to, he goes, the science stuff comes easy to you. He's talking to me. Like, and he's right. Yeah, science was always easy to me. You need to figure out business. So major in business, and then he paid for my MBA.
Great.
And then it was sort of like, God, maybe I was done with my MBA 6 months, and my mother was diagnosed with osteoporosis. And so she told me about the medication she was prescribed, and she didn't want to take them. And I was like, oh boy, like, based on what you told me, I wouldn't want to either.
Yeah.
But she went from being a tennis, like, she was, her things were tennis, hiking, and gardening. And she didn't want to do any of those things anymore because she was afraid she'd fracture a bone. For those listeners that don't know what osteoporosis is, it's the weakening of bones. The bones become more porous and therefore are more likely to fracture. So I told my mom, let me look into this. Like, because this seems like something that should be easier to fix and maybe not with a biochemical approach. And I'm really glad. In fact, my PhD advisor told me, if you had done your PhD first, you would have talked yourself out of this because it's so different. Basically, I looked at who the outliers are of bone density, who has the most powerful bone. And it turns out it's gymnasts. It's a very easy population to identify. So gymnasts, they expose themselves to huge loading events, hitting the ground at sometimes 10 or 15 times their body weight.
Wow.
Right. Way beyond what we would get with weights.
Yeah, right.
Like, way magnitudes beyond. But They also retire at an average age of 19 because they get so injured. So it's like, okay, how do we get that bone loading without the risks of injury? And so that was what ultimately became OsteoStrong.
Yeah. That was really like your first
venture. That was my first company, my first invention. So I developed a series of devices that put so this is the axis of a bone, put axial compression on the bone. So compress the bone from end to end, slightly distorting the bone during the stimulus, which only takes a few seconds. The bone springs back into position, and now it's primed to pull in minerals and recalcify and making the bone less porous. So more little walls go into that sort of matrix inside the bone, and the bone becomes more powerful. It works for everyone who it's right for. Now, it's not right for absolutely everybody. You got to be relatively ambulatory, relatively pain-free. Move around. Like if you're in a wheelchair, you can't self-compress your femur if you have no use of your leg muscles. Like, so it's very self-driven.
And this is, would this be more preventative than?
No, it's curative.
Okay.
Yeah, you can use it in a preventative manner. Like there are many women who have some of the risk factors, like family members that have it, or they were vegan for a particular period of time. This is really why I became such a fan of carnivore. When you look at what happens with bone, bone is destroyed by vegetables. Fruits and vegetables. If you eat fruits and vegetables, you're going to have bone that is falling apart.
Interesting.
It needs animal protein.
Just to maintain density?
Yeah, it's and it's not just calcium. Like, in fact, calcium that you get through more kind of carnivore nutrition, the calcium level is high. In fact, calcium is the only mineral that your body balances itself. So the like if you take calcium pills and you're not giving the body a reason to hang on to that or to more calcium. So what happens is people do less and less activity and then they start losing bone and then they have menopause and they start losing bone even faster because of menopause. So then they're like, well, I should take calcium tablets. That actually accelerates the loss because the more calcium that's in the bloodstream that you're taking, the body's like, oh, we can let go some of more of it that's held within the bone.
Interesting.
So then it makes the problem even worse. Now there's conflicting research on that. Some of the research on the subject, they'd rather recommend calcium just because it's the safer recommendation.
Sure.
But there are actually more studies that say the opposite. So now there might be higher quality studies that say calcium. But I'm like, I'm not gonna get caught up in that argument because you're still doing fuck all for getting the calcium to stay in the bone. You've got to stimulate the bone. It's just like a muscle. Like,
so if you
can take all the protein you want and not work out, and are you going to get bigger muscles? No.
Right.
Same thing with bone.
So if you, theoretically, if you were doing treatments at OsteoStrong and taking calcium, would it be more effective?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you're actually using it.
You're giving the body a reason to use it. Right. So just having the nutrient without the stimulus, you could be making the problem worse.
Sure.
So, yeah.
At what point did you realize that like this was actually going to work? Like, I mean, every entrepreneur has an idea, right? But the idea is a dime a dozen, execution is what matters. And so when was the point where you were true. Like, yeah, I think like not only is this actually something that people are taking, but we actually have clinical research here that now says that this works.
I knew it was going to work before I even built a prototype. But just because there was enough data that showed the loading and the response to that loading.
Gotcha.
So it was
you
really
just had to
just,
figure out how
like,
to do the loading
to me,
without the risk of injury.
This solution was so obvious. But things can be obvious if you really understand research and you know how to sort it and group it together correctly.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people read the words in the research and they can repeat a sentence here and there, but do they really know what the study's about? They don't have a clue. And the internet is full of people talking about studies that they don't really know what it's about. And research is not really written for regular people to read. It's written for other researchers to read.
Right.
So they can then leverage that information into further research. So, you know, I get it. Like, I understand the problem. Researchers could definitely do a better job trying to make the information more accessible.
More digestible
to,
for the
right,
average
more
person.
Digestible to the broad population.
Totally
because
agree with that,
ultimately, you can dazzle your researcher friends with you know, like we broke the data up into tertiles. You mean thirds? Like, why didn't you just say third? You know what I mean? It's right. Just like,
well, what happens is the majority of the population gets their information from marketers instead of researchers.
Facts. Yeah. Absolute fact. Yeah. Why do we need 8 glasses of water a day? By the way, we don't. But why are we told that?
I don't know. I read it in a health book when I was...
It's in a lot of health books. It's like even in medical textbooks. But you know where it came from?
No.
Gatorade.
Oh, really?
Gatorade determined that that's what people need
yeah.
for their marketing. And it's like, you know... Are you going to drink water all day long? Or, you know, this, our drink has like yeah. good taste to it and it has electrolytes,
yeah.
which is what the movie Idiocracy makes fun of the entire time sure. with the whole electrolyte thing. Yeah. Everybody was walking around in the 80s talking about electrolytes. And it's like, do you guys even know what that is? And they're like, you know, no, I mean, it's good for you, I guess.
Yeah.
I have no idea what it is.
All I know is this tastes really good.
Right, right, yeah. right. It tastes good because it's got tons of sugar.
You're drinking 38 grams of sugar.
That's yeah. right. Yeah. Yeah. yeah.
Oh, all right. So. Yeah. I know you might break my heart with this one, John, but I'm going to ask you anyway. Artificial sweeteners, dangers, positives, negatives. Like if you're drinking a Gatorade versus a Gatorade Zero that has no sugar or calories.
So not all artificial sweeteners are as bad as others.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people who look at nutrition and will land on carnivore, I mean, basically the people who are reading the current literature, they all come to the same conclusion. You got to go and examine what it is that gets us to go off the rails. Hmm. And so one of the problems with artificial sweeteners, and I sell products with artificial sweeteners, though I wish it weren't necessary. Really wish it weren't necessary because
that's a good way to say it, yeah.
it still trains your mind that sweet taste. Mm-hmm. is something. Now, there's aspartame and sucralose
yeah.
are linked to cancer. And in fact, oh my God, I was on this show, which I didn't realize was sponsored by Pepsi.
Oh no.
And so they interviewed me, it was a news show, but one of their sponsors was Pepsi. And you know, like there's certain things that the newscaster, the anchor, like they'll just cut you off. And so
can't say that.
Said, right,
we
right.
love you, Pepsi.
Because we're talking about artificial sweeteners. And I'm like, well, this is the first study that is actually look at the mechanism of cancer cells being created. And it had to do with this new type of test that they could look at lining of the stomach and how it reacted to the introduction of sucralose. And so it was the first mechanistic study which showed precancer cells being created. Now, the other ones were just like survey-based studies, epidemiology, which is very low level of evidence. And a lot of people like look at epidemiology and, you know, just go, well, it's the best we have because you can't keep a human being in a cage
sure.
to do a nutrition study on them. Well, I mean, at least this country can't. There's a couple others that...
I was going to say, yet.
I've heard yeah. some things. Yeah, like in certain countries, which I won't name, they will ask you to sign up. And you will be like in like a dorm room.
Oh, gosh.
And they will control everything they give you. Honestly, if people volunteer for it and they get paid for it,
yeah,
sure, and yes, we'll get a more valuable outcome out of that.
Right.
So anyway, it'll never happen in the States. So when looking at some of these epidemiological studies, these survey-based studies, it's just like, well, the problem with survey-based studies is people tell the person asking the question what they think that person wants to hear or something.
Or what they think might increase their status in the eyes of that person. Or
maybe.
Like there's some sort of bias.
Yeah, yeah. It leaves somebody questioning themselves and wanting sure. to sort of like put their best foot forward, which is really not. Like the point. The
yeah,
point
right,
is
exactly.
We just want accurate data.
Yeah, know the truth. Right.
Right. So like actually recording what people eat is way better than asking them what they ate.
So basically, sucralose and aspartame are probably the two most commonly yeah. used.
Oh, by the way, when I said that, the guy immediately cuts me off and he says, well, just keep in mind, there are multiple studies on the subject that found that these sweeteners are very harmless, so you shouldn't make any decisions. And it's just like, hey, dude. Like I wanted to say, hey, dude, I just told you why those studies are not as powerful as this new one. But, you know.
Do you want me here or do you not want me here?
Right. And it was like a big news station. So, yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Whatever.
That's how it goes, right?
Yeah.
So which ones are, from what I've heard, stevia would be one of the better ones or there's a couple.
Stevia is the one I use in my products.
Okay.
it still reinforces the sweet taste.
Sure.
But I'm not going to make, you know, a pre-workout drink taste like.
Yeah, but.
Yeah, just tastes awful. Yeah,
that like, flavor doesn't get many people. It gets some.
I mean, some, yeah, sometimes. Like, yeah, it's a problem in society is that everything needs to taste like a dessert.
Yeah.
Like when people like, you know, complain about the way a supplement tastes, it's like, it's a supplement. Like you should be happy it's flavored at all. Cause if it were unflavored, like you'd be gagging while swallowing it. However, people just kick and scream. And it's like, it's gotta taste like a candy bar. Otherwise they won't eat it. And that's like, look at how conditioned we are. Like when I was a little kid, candy bars were a reward.
Right.
Now I walk into people's homes and there's a bowl of candy bars like on the counter and kids will just stand there and eat two or three and then, you know, go play video games, come back before dinner, eat two or three.
Yeah. Not have any room for dinner.
Not have any room for anything, which wasn't even nutritious anyway, because they probably just got pizza.
Yeah. I was just saying their parents just make them a separate meal outside of the meal that they're eating.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. That didn't fly with me, man. My mom used to set a timer. She's like, if the food's not done before that timer hits zero, then you're going to bed. And it was like 7 o'clock.
You know, so, nice. All right, okay, well, so you finished.
Guess I got to eat the food unless I want to go to bed. And there were a couple times I did go to bed because I didn't want to eat the food. But you know what? I had to learn how to cope.
Probably
with it,
when there was a lot
food,
of vegetables
you know?
On your plate. I'm not eating that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so start OsteoStrong. At what point do things really start like kicking off and going well? And tell me about the partnership with Tony Robbins and how that came about.
When Tony came.
Okay.
Came aboard to
OsteoStrong. How did you guys get connected or find out about each other?
You know, he called me.
Oh, really?
So yeah, he was heard about it.
Okay.
There was a guy.
At this point, like how big are you as a company in terms of like locations and things like that?
At the point where Tony called me, I was operating out of, you know, a room about twice this size.
Okay.
And in the Napa Valley, California.
Okay.
That's when I first started talking to Tony.
Wow.
And then he started really getting involved a couple years later when we were ready to scale up. And it was a little bit different company at that point, which was much better for Tony. He understood enough about what I was trying to say. He read my first book called Osteogenic Loading.
Okay.
I don't recommend that to anyone, by the way. An adaptation of my PhD dissertation. It's like super boring.
Okay.
Weightlifting is a waste of time. That's the book everybody should read. It's like, it talks about the bone density and it talks about strength. It talks about nutrition. It talks about like all, there's a whole section in there about falsehoods of fitness. You know, just stuff you've been told your whole life. Yeah, it's designed for. Now, I put 260 references, so you can look up the studies if you want to. They're there.
Okay.
But I might say this study found this, which really means, you know, and I explain it in a way where like, you know, my mom would understand it.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, she's not a scientific type person, so. Yeah.
How did you find the process of working with Tony and his team? Was that pretty seamless for you? Was it an enjoyable process?
No. Never is.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it's like my baby, you know, like.
That's why I ask.
Yeah.
It's always I ask the question because I think that it's important for people to like not glamorize certain parts of things.
Sure.
Like a lot of people would be like, oh my gosh, dream come true. That's amazing. But if you're like an entrepreneur and like you said, like this isn't just something you came up with in the middle of the night.
It's never easy.
Like, this was a pain point of yours because of a problem with your mom and like you are giving some aspect of control to somebody else, regardless of how you want to paint the picture. So,
right. Yeah. So, you know, I have a royalty deal with the company and they're taking the technology to market. And yeah, at first it was sort of like, oh, let's, you know, like have a DJ booth there and let's make it like really fun and let's attract young people. And it's like, young people don't have osteoporosis.
We're not struggling with their bone density.
Like, we don't need to make this place the coolest place to be.
Right.
We're actually solving a problem. And by the way, osteoporosis kills as many people as breast cancer does.
Wow.
Right. It's not as dramatic because what happens is people have a fracture, they go to the hospital, they can't heal their fracture, they're stuck in bed because they can't move around, they get pneumonia, and, you know, they die annoying. So it's less dramatic, but it's still death.
Right. Right.
You have a 50% chance of dying if you have a hip fracture over the age of 50.
Wow.
Within 1 year. Within 1 year of that fracture.
That's wild.
Yeah. Absolutely crazy statistic.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there's very poor education on the subject. Also, I mean, I think the breast cancer awareness marketing had gone really well. They get everybody in the NFL to wear pink shoes.
Sure.
Also, I think it's very scary for women, whereas breasts are like, you know, something that females have.
Right. Exclusively.
I can
almost
still say that, yeah, on this podcast, right? Because we're not in clown world right now. Okay. Yeah. So breast tissues typically grown on a female body.
Yeah.
And I say typically because I want to leave margin in there for anybody else who wants to feel included. But the idea that this symbol of femininity can actually host something that could kill someone, I think it's just, it's a more scary thought.
Yeah.
But it's still the same amount of death, you know? So, but I mean, these were also challenges.
With a very similar market, I'm assuming, if you want to call it a market, I'm just saying like women who are aging, maybe who didn't do a lot of athletic things, typically probably have not as good bone density. Is my point. Is like that same segment of the population is going to struggle with that.
Yeah.
Like they're similar.
Yeah, similar groups of people. Also, anyone who's had chemo or radiation destroys your bone. Mm. Even quicker than veganism does, which is shocking because it's really bad with veganism. So the 20 out of 20 studies have demonstrated that vegetarianism and veganism will cause you to have much more damaged bone density and ultimately shorter mortality. You'll die younger by being a vegan because your bones are just so frail. You know, also they get osteonecrosis problems. You ever see a vegan bite into like a carrot and their teeth come out?
No.
This happens. You know, that's like 7 years after being vegan, your skull loses attachment to its teeth.
So wild.
Yeah. And people are like, American Medical Association is telling you this is the healthiest thing you can do.
Right.
And they know better. They know that's not true. But it works out for world governments who like pushing cheap food.
Sure. Do you get a bunch of people coming to you from that lifestyle at all? Or are they just so repelled by everything else that you say that they're not willing to listen to you on this other topic?
No, I don't like the idea of veganism. It is malnutrition, however you... But I'm not mean to vegans. Like, I always attack the idea, not the person.
Okay.
Because the person is maybe just misinformed.
Sure.
Like, it's not their fault. And also, like, I'm a gentleman. Like, I learned that in my fraternity. You never say anything nasty about a person. You might say what they're trafficking in is bad.
Well, if you can't disseminate ideas, how do we know if they're correct or incorrect?
Well, also, ad hominem. You know, I noticed that when people, what I'm most known for is not the bone density thing, it's X3, it's the muscle technology. Mm. So I can force a muscle to grow way faster than anybody who's lifting weights. That's why my second book is called Weightlifting is a Waste of Time. And I demonstrate that in the book. But people, you know, they get so upset and then they look at my scientific arguments. Well, the scientific argument's bulletproof, like variable resistance. So like when I do a chest press, I hold 130 pounds here at the bottom, in the middle, maybe 300 pounds, and then 550 at the top. And I can exhaust the musculature to a far greater degree and trigger much more growth by doing that. And all of the studies on the subject say exactly the same thing. Like, this will make you grow muscle much faster. So what happens is people want to attack me. They can't attack the scientific argument, so they attack me personally instead.
Yeah.
So they make fun of my university and say it's not accredited, which is a lie. It is. Or they'll say, well, you know, he takes steroids, which I don't, which is really easy to figure out because it's sort of like, have you ever seen a steroid user? Like, they're very different.
Yeah.
And all other little things. So they attack me personally.
Yeah, yeah. Because they don't like your ideas.
Right, because they're upset by the idea, but they know that the way I've presented it is infallible.
Yeah. You're not just like a meathead worked out once.
Right. And I'm not just a guy with an opinion. Yeah. Like, in fact, all of the claims I've ever made, I have multiple research references backing them up. So it's like, if you don't like the idea, well, you know, that's your emotions. Like, science isn't for you to like or dislike. Mm. You know, if somebody says something else is, you know, the most effective, you know, whatever. It's like, it is not your place to get upset about it. Mm. You just accept it for what it is and say, well, I'm not going to do it that way. Mm. Oh, okay. Well, great. Nobody was going to force you to.
Sure. Sure.
But don't kick and scream about a scientific finding. Right. Like, that's the behavior of a 2-year-old.
But this documentary that I watched.
Right. Yeah. I get a lot of people. Well, not so much anymore, but people used to ask me about Game Changers all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every single fact in there is a lie.
Yeah.
Everything. There are many websites.
Documentaries are hard, man.
the list.
I like documentaries, but then, like you said, like they're not, most of the time, they're not just educational, like unbiased educational pieces. They're, somebody's got a story. Somebody's got something they want to prove. They start with the premise.
Of course.
And then they go search for all the evidence to support the premise and they put it into a film.
Which is exactly
they know
the,
what music they're selecting. They know what
the
scenes,
wrong
what stories
way to
they're
do
telling.
Any scientific process.
Of course. Yeah.
Is, right. Start with
the
what
conclusion.
You want to present. Start
and
with
then
the
find
conclusion.
Evidence. Yeah. To back up
right.
what you already
like,
have concluded.
But, you know, ultimately, making a documentary is not free.
Right.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to pay for it. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to pay for it,
they got to profit from it.
Yeah.
Right.
Like
right.
same with writing a book. I get criticized for talking about the products I developed in my book. And it's just like, why do you think I wrote a book?
Yeah.
Nobody makes money off of writing books anymore.
Right.
Like literally nobody.
Right.
I mean,
except
maybe
for John Grisham and
yeah,
and
I was going to say fiction.
Yeah,
you can
right.
make a lot of money writing fiction, right. but if you're writing a scientific text, like,
yeah,
you know, you're probably going to have baked into that text some ideas that have something to do with your business. And I don't see anything wrong with that.
No.
Like
no.
I'm being 100% truthful in all the information I'm
right.
presenting, but I also have a patented product that
right.
goes along with all this information.
Yeah, exactly. Well, listen, man, this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll get some amazing controversial clips out of this for you. Appreciate you coming on.
Yeah.
Before we take off here, where should people go find out a little bit more about what you got going on?
Well, because my last name is so hard to spell, it's drj.com.
DOCTOR,
the letter J.com. Then there's links to all my social. If you're going to follow me on one thing, follow me on Instagram. I just
okay.
like the platform better.
Great.
And whenever I do something on YouTube, I always promote it.
And that's your full name, right? On Instagram?
It's Dr. Jaquish. DrJaquish.
Dr. Jaquish on Instagram.
Right.
And
but you can
Dr.
find
J.
that
J.
through drj.com if
Got
you go to Dr. J.
Dr. spelled out DOCTORJ.com. Go check out some of the stuff. That John has out there. If they're go to Google Maps, search for an OsteoStrong in your local area. Try to find
that's right.
Find one of those spots. Go in, see if there's gotten if there's any issues that maybe you could
mostly
get
it's probably for your listeners. It's probably your mother's.
Okay,
it's probably
perfect.
Yeah, because
good to know.
You know, osteoporosis typically affecting 60 and over. Though it can affect younger people. It can
sure.
affect people in their 20s if they're super inactive.
Yeah,
and if they eat like basically the standard American diet.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I actually had a meeting at West Point not that long ago talking about how the best of the best coming into West Point are having yeah. osteoporosis. Think about
Gosh.
That. Yeah. Teenagers, 18 years old,
wow.
they have osteoporosis. So like it's becoming a much younger challenge, but yeah, for the most part, it's going to be postmenopausal population. So, you know,
Perfect.
Ask your mother if she has low bone density and yeah. then try and find an OsteoStrong.
Love
location
it, dude.
For her.
Yeah? Thanks so much for coming on. That was a lot of fun.
Awesome. Thanks, Travis.
Cool. Yes, sir.
All right.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for spending some time with me and my friends. If you want to be better friends with me, then head over to travischappell.com/team to subscribe to my free newsletter, Your Friend Travis, where I share what's on my mind about life, building a business, raising kids, being married, and anything else I would normally share with my close circle of friends. That's travischappell.com/team. And my biggest ask of you, since I'm sharing my friends with you, is to share this episode with a friend of yours that hasn't listened to the show yet. Then leave us a quick 5-star rating in Apple Podcasts and in Spotify. It would mean the world to us as it helps us make sure that this show continues to be more valuable to you. Thanks in advance, and I'll catch you on the next episode.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger. Offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.